My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of The Mark Moss Show, where we talk about the decentralized revolution, talking about the way the world's changing. Of course, we always look at it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology, so you have better context to what is going on. And I want to run through some of the latest breaking news headlines of the week, because it has not been a dull week. It's been making my job pretty easy. There's plenty to talk about. The problem is there's too much to talk about. Trying to narrow it down to what we're going to talk about. But man, there is so much going on. Of course, we've been talking about the financial system melting down, the Fed raising rates, they're draining liquidity out of the system until something breaks, like the banks. Of course, the banks broke. We talked about that last week. If you've missed that, go check it out on the podcast. Just search The Mark Moss Show on the podcast. But what there's another thing at play here. There's like this dangerous undercurrent that's going on. So while everybody's witnessing the Fed and all eyes are on the Fed and they're raising rates, and then we're witnessing the banks going down, and SVB had to get bailed out, and then, you know, now the Treasury and the Fed said they're going to backstop all the deposits. Now Janet Yellen, the Treasury, said they're not going to, and there's all this, right? All this distraction going on. There's like something else going on down below the surface. Something that's deeper and darker and more scary. Now, this week came out this report called the Economic Report of the President. It was a long report. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that you read it unless you want to incur some brain damage. It's about almost 450 pages long. 450 pages for the report of the president. The year in review, the years ahead, confronting new global challenges with strong international economic partnerships, investing in young children's care and education. You already know what's happening to the kids' education at school. You don't want to know about that. Chapter 5, building stronger post-secondary institutions, supply challenges in the U.S. labor markets. Man, this is all just simple. Just tell the government to stop. Get out of this. Competition in the digital economy, new technologies and old economics. Chapter 8, digital assets, relearning economic principles. Relearning economic principles. I think they're the ones that should go back and relearn economic principles. Chapter 9, opportunities for better managing weather risk in changing climate. And then there's some appendages, report to the president on activities of the Council of Economic Advisors, statistical tables relating to income, employment, production, and more. So while all of this, I like to think of it like a magician, right? most of you probably know, I hate to ruin it for you, but magic isn't real. It's sleight of hand. Hey, look over there while they do something over here. And that's sort of like what seems to be happening where all of this stuff is going on. And in the meantime, they're like trying to ram a bunch of stuff through. Now, in the previous segment, I talked about two different open source protocols, a monetary protocol and an information protocol. It's going to change the world. Closed systems are going to continue to get more closed, but open systems are going to continue to compete for those, and we're going to move more to the open systems. If you missed that, go check it out on the podcast player. Just search Mark Moss Show. You can catch that. But going back to what the government's doing, something I've been talking about for a while is this Operation Choke Point 2.0, as we're labeling it. There was a 1.0. Lots of people in the government got in trouble under Obama, the Obama administration. Lois Lerner, I believe, head of the IRS, had to step down and all these things. But in this economic report, well, so now we have this Choke Point 2.0, and it looks like through the fog of war, there's a lot of casualties. So we had this banking collapse, and it was Silvergate Bank. Then it was Silicon Valley Bank, and then it was Signature Bank, the three S's. The one thing that seems to tie all three of those together is that they were all very crypto-friendly banks. Silvergate was one of the main crypto banks. SVB, which of course Silicon Valley Bank, a lot of Silicon Valley, was in crypto projects. And then Signature Bank, which was another very crypto-friendly bank. Now, why did those three banks go down? Now, we've talked about it extensively. You know, they got a bunch of money deposits because the Fed created so much money. Their deposits swelled up. They put them into U.S. treasuries. The Fed raised rates. The treasuries lost value. The banks didn't have money. Somehow a bank run got triggered where a lot of people wanted to go pull their money out of the bank. The banks didn't have it. And that's the story that we're told. And that's actually what happened. But why did those things happen is the better question to ask. Why was there a bank run triggered on SVB, but not on all the other banks? Every bank is in the same situation. This is not just unique to those banks. They're all in the same situation. So why was there a bank run? Now, you know, I'm no stranger of dipping my toe in the conspiratorial waters, if you will, because I'm trying to make sense of all this. And I just don't understand why those banks got attacked. And like I said, it just so happens that the three of them were very heavily into cryptocurrency companies. Now, after the 2008 banking collapse, there was a whole bunch of new regulations that were put in place. One of them was called the Dodd-Frank Act. And one of the original writers of that bill, Dodds, put out an article saying that he doesn't understand why, and regulators at the FDIC didn't understand why Signature Bank was taken over. It wasn't insolvent. There was no reason why it should be taken over. So why was it taken over? Why was it taken over the other two S banks? Well, and they were all related to crypto. Now, if we go back and read this economic report of the president, it starts to give us a little bit of a better picture. Now, they had a very scathing report, let's say, to talk about cryptocurrencies, as a matter of fact. And of course, it came during this growing industry concern that federal regulators are looking to debank these crypto companies. So, you know, the narrative that they're trying to control is that these banks went down because they're doing risky crypto assets. Well, first of all, they didn't lose money on crypto. They lost money because they put their money into US treasuries. But it looks like part of this Choke Point 2.0 where they're trying to take away the banks that these companies use. Now, the report that this came out said that many cryptocurrencies do not have a fundamental value. Okay. Well, I would agree. Now, of course, I'm very clear. I like to say Bitcoin, not crypto. What do I mean by that? Well, I'm not saying that Bitcoin is not a cryptocurrency. What I'm saying is when I'm talking about Bitcoin, I'm talking about Bitcoin only. And when I talk about crypto, I'm talking about crypto, everything else other than Bitcoin. So we always want to make those two things very clear. But what is a fundamental value? Typically, you might consider that be called like an intrinsic value, which there's no such thing as intrinsic value. All value is subjective. But they say that it's argued that crypto assets may provide other benefits, such as improving payment systems, increasing financial inclusion, and creating mechanisms for the distribution of intellectual property and financial value that bypass intermediaries that extract value from both the provider and the recipient. Looking under the hood at these arguments, however, shows a more complicated picture. So far, crypto assets have brought none of these benefits, end quote. That's what the report said. I talk about this all the time. We're going to get to this a little bit later when I talk about some other news headlines. The number one threat to our democracy, the number one threat that they talked about in Davos in Switzerland at the World Economic Forum in February is misinformation and disinformation. But the irony is that all the misinformation comes from the government. I don't want to say all, a good majority of it comes from the government itself. So how can they go and say this? So Bitcoin hasn't done anything to increase financial inclusion. It certainly helped in Africa. Over 80% of all Bitcoin transactions under $1,000 are being done in Africa where they don't have access to banking. It says that they said it could bypass intermediaries that extract value. Well, that's being done. It's doing payment remittances all over the world right now and bypassing the extraction of these intermediaries. So it's doing that. So looking under the hood, it shows that it's exactly done just that. They've nailed it exactly, except for, of course, the office of the president is lying to you. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Maw Show, talking about, of course, the decentralized revolution, running through some of the latest breaking news headlines of the week, and looking at the attack on the banking sector and the crypto sector. I got a very special guest coming up when we come back, an SEC attorney. We're going to talk more about this attack. You don't want to miss this. I'll be right back in a second. Don't go away.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.com.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Maw Show. Of course, we're talking about some of the latest breaking news headlines of the week so you can understand what's going on. And before the break, I was talking about how this banking crisis is all the rage. Everyone's focused on that. But then there's like these dangerous undercurrents at the same time. Some of it's sparked by this economic report of the president that came out and this kind of choke point 2.0 that I've been talking about. I have a very special guest with me right now. I got James Murphy. You can find him online at Meta Law Man. He is a securities attorney, and we're going to talk about what potentially is going on here. Now, James, I had you on before, and I was kind of talking about how I thought we were going to continue to see a massive push into more regulations on these crypto assets. They would be labeled securities. And, I was even going as far as to saying as a category, we might not see another bull run in cryptocurrencies. Again, not Bitcoin. And so far, that seems to be what's happening. And there's a lot of things happening really quickly. We're really seeing the SEC step up enforcement. A lot of data points to dig into. Let's start with one that broke this week that seemed to be really big, and it was Coinbase being hit with this Wells notice. Break that down for me a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So a Wells notice is a standard part of the process when you are under investigation by the SEC. It typically comes near the end of the process where the staff within the Division of Enforcement, which is a part of the SEC, says to the target of the investigation, we, the staff of enforcement, intend to recommend to the commissioners that they approve a lawsuit against you. The purpose of the Wells notice, that communication, is to give the target an opportunity to rebut the allegations of wrongdoing and to convince the commissioners not to follow the recommendation of the enforcement division and instead decline to approve the lawsuit. So that's where it is in the process. That's generally near the end. There've been a couple weird things about how this has happened. In the communication, the SEC declined to inform Coinbase which tokens they believe are securities, which tokens they're going to assert are securities in a potential lawsuit. So that makes it a little difficult on Coinbase to rebut the contention if they're not told which of the tokens are allegedly violative.
Yeah, of course.
And the second weird thing about it is they only took two depositions of executives at Coinbase. That's weird. I've handled many of these, and you can see dozens, particularly on a big case. You know, this is to the advantage of the Division of Enforcement to get people on the record under oath as much as possible. So it feels, you know, I'm not representing anybody in it. It feels like it's a little bit rushed, even though they've been threatening. Gary Gensler's been threatening to do this for ever since he took office a couple of years ago. So those are two unusual points, and it's possible that the one or more of the commissioners will be uncomfortable if the Division of Enforcement continues to refuse to say which tokens that are listed on Coinbase are securities.
Yeah. Do we know that it's specifically about tokens that are listed that could be securities, or could it be because of like yield products that they have, some of that we've already seen happen with Gemini?
Yeah, great question. I'll tell you what, the disclosure by Coinbase was the most thorough disclosure I think I've ever seen of a Wells notice. You know, actually, Mark, there's some disagreement at the securities bar as to whether a public company is required to disclose the fact that they have received a Wells notice. It is the safer course of action to disclose by a public company. But in any event, they went into great detail about the whole process leading up to this Wells notice and all of, you know, their many interactions with the SEC trying to head this off, trying to establish, a regulatory framework that they both could agree on. But in any event, they said it. They said it's about some of the assets they have listed, and it's about a yield product as well. And so we've seen that kind of case before.
So we kind of know that. We've seen what happened with Gemini. They paid a fine. They delisted it. They were kind of okay. But now you're saying Coinbase is saying it's actually because of some assets. Would that be strange that Gemini didn't get hit with assets that it has? It only got the yield product. Would it be weird that they already went after an exchange and only went after yield, and now they're going after another exchange for both? And would they then go back to Gemini, or how does that work?
Well, this fits in the under the rubric of prosecutorial discretion. Now, they're not prosecuting crimes. The SEC prosecutes civil claims against people, not criminal. But they get to pick Why did they pick Coinbase? I don't know, but you're 100% right. They could bring the identical case against Gemini on listed assets if they want to take the position that some of the tokens qualify as securities and therefore they're running an unregistered securities exchange.
Doesn't some of this set precedent though? So like, for example, if they go after Coinbase for listing these tokens, but then Gemini has the exact same tokens listed. I mean, wouldn't Coinbase go, wait a minute, how come you didn't go after them or vice versa? Like, I mean, isn't there precedent there?
Yeah, they don't have to go after everybody at the same time for the same claim. Your use of the word precedent is exactly right. I mean, you would expect that if they win against Coinbase, and let's just make up a number. Let's say there are 10 tokens that a federal judge declares are securities that have not been registered, then you would expect, I don't want to go too far, but you would expect that other exchanges operating in the United States might delist the very same tokens very quickly.
Yeah, they'd go, oh shoot, they may be coming back to us. Yeah, I saw that. It was Coinbase's statement said we prepared for this disappointing development. And they talked about how they've tried over and over and over to kind of get kind of approval, and they just got silence back. I'm curious. I mean, you know, we're seeing lots of things. We saw then Justin Sun was sued. Tron was also sued for securities and market manipulation. So I guess they're saying the TRX and BTT are under unregistered securities. So then I guess those tokens, if they're listed on either of those exchanges, would then be a problem, right?
Yeah, it's got to be something that they would be discussing in the compliance, legal and compliance function within every exchange. These developments, they're following closely, and I guess the biggest, most obvious example is XRP, you know, and when the SEC went after Ripple and the XRP token, it did get delisted. So yeah, they're paying attention.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. I'm talking with James Murphy. You can find him online at Meta Law Man. He is a securities attorney, and we're talking about some of the potential of what we're calling choke point 2.0, how the government seems to be going after crypto banks and cryptocurrencies, and the SEC is bringing enforcement action. We're going to cover a lot more when we come back. We're going to take just a quick break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth-Activating Melon Serum. This next-generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at Meaningful Beauty.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about, of course, each and every week, the decentralized revolution, running through some news. And I'm joined by James Murphy. He's online at Meta Law Man. He's a securities attorney. And we're talking about some of these security issues and where that puts the state of cryptocurrency. We talked about Coinbase. We talked about Tron. Another thing I want to ask you about is the New York Attorney General. So we know in the crypto space, New York is like the most aggressive government, state against cryptocurrency. They have kind of had their own New York Bit license that they've had for a long time. So we know they're very restrictive. But the New York Attorney General filed a lawsuit against KuCoin, so another exchange, but also said that Ethereum is a security. What's going on with that? that's a big question.
It's a really, really good question. So a little background, you undoubtedly know, Bill Hinman, the head of corporate finance at the SEC years ago, said Bitcoin is not a security, and Ethereum, if it ever was a security, is no longer a security because it had arrived at a sufficient level of decentralization where it wouldn't make sense to apply the securities laws anymore to Ethereum. And that's kind of what everybody thought was, you know, the SEC's position. But then when Gary Gensler came in, you started hearing more of like, is Ethereum really in the clear here? So what happened was a lawyer in San Diego sued the SEC last November, asking a federal judge to simply declare Ethereum is not a security. The SEC countered and said this case should be dismissed. There is no case or controversy here. It's not ripe for any adjudication because, get this, we have not decided yet whether we think Ethereum is a security, is literally in a brief they filed. Now, in my opinion, that's embarrassing because Ethereum, was started 8 years earlier, 2015, 8 years. Yeah, that's right. And they still hadn't made up their mind. That collides with Gary Gensler's standard position that it is clear as a bell under Howey that these are all securities. You know, right. What's a security, what's not is clear. And so for the SEC to say, we just haven't decided yet, and they want to backpedal away from the Hinman thing. So that was embarrassing. That happened, a few months ago. And then suddenly the New York Attorney General instigates an investigation of KuCoin. They use investigator in their office. So there's an investigator signed to the New York Attorney General's office, and he was told, go open an account at KuCoin, which doesn't have a Bit license. It's an offshore exchange from the Seychelles Islands. And he managed, as a New York resident, to get an account there, which is a no-no. And so they told him, apparently KuCoin lists 700 tokens, Mark. They told him, go buy Ethereum. So he bought Ethereum, sold Ethereum, therefore traded Ethereum as a New York resident. That is now the basis, a basis for the lawsuit, that Ethereum is an unregistered security and KuCoin was not properly licensed in any event to deal with New York residents. But the underpinning of the case is Ethereum is a security. So one wonders if there was any communication between the SEC and the New York Attorney General to instigate an interesting timing in terms of let's go after Ethereum specifically. KuCoin, they served a subpoena on KuCoin. KuCoin did not respond. The Attorney General believes, and I believe, that there's a good likelihood KuCoin will not defend the case, in which case the New York AG might find that it's got a clear fairway to get, what they want. And that is a declaration from a judge, a New York state judge, that Ethereum is a security. And boy, Mark, that would be a really, really big deal when you consider, that it's the second largest market cap and all of these thousands of projects built on the Ethereum network.
So a couple questions I have with that. So one, you're saying that if KuCoin doesn't defend that, then nobody's left to defend Ethereum, except for the Ethereum Foundation.
Okay, so
I mean, so somebody could step up to defend Ethereum potentially.
Absolutely could. And okay. This is for lawyers like me, this is fascinating, because you would think Vitalik and the foundation would be all over this because the stakes are enormous. Even though the United States is just one country, it's a pretty important country when it comes to, you know, the digital asset ecosystem and Ethereum in particular, and all of these thousands of projects. So far, we haven't heard anything from them. And they have a conundrum, Mark. For lawyers, this is fascinating. I don't know if it's fascinating to your audience, yeah, but this is fascinating. If Vitalik and the foundation step in and defend the case, it helps the New York Attorney sure. General to yeah. say, well, see what I mean?
Common it enterprise.
It is centralized. There is control here, exactly. And so they've got a little bit of a conundrum here and have to make a really important decision.
Back to that Hinman thing, is it possible, it seems like it would be possible, that it, to his point, potentially could have become decentralized enough, but the merge seems to push it way back to being centralized again. So is it possible that it did go from centralized to decentralized, but then also then went back to being centralized because of the merge, a common enterprise, deriving the results of, you know, their labor, and because of the staking that they're doing?
Okay, so I'm not going to offer an opinion on that. What you have just said is something that is a theory that is definitely out there and being discussed now.
It's possible it could be argued.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen staking cases. That's why Kraken took off. You know, their staking product was declared, you know, the contended by the SEC and that it was a investment contract. So Kraken said, okay, we're not going to defend it. Here's $30 million and we'll stop doing this for U.S. Customers. I tweeted that out, that settlement, and said Kraken agreed to stop the staking program. And the CEO tweeted back to me and said, well, to be clear, it's only in the United States. The rest of the world will continue as before, you know, with this staking program. And so I think we're seeing a lot of that happening where businesses are making a judgment that it's no longer safe to engage in certain kinds of, crypto activities here in the United States with U.S. citizens.
If the state of New York were to win that lawsuit and Ethereum would be deemed a security by New York, what does that mean nationally or federally? I mean,
oh boy, that's a great question. There is a premise in the U.S. Constitution that other states are supposed to respect the judgments of one state. I don't know if you remember this, but a few years ago, there was, you know, states began to change their laws to accept and endorse same-sex marriage. And so this is the same issue, is if it's okay in New York, does Mississippi have to recognize, you know, the same-sex marriage? These are very two very different things, but the legal concept is the same. So I'm not going to say how that would definitely work out, because
it hasn't spread with like the marijuana laws, for example, right? So it doesn't always work out that way. But I'm
correct.
Curious if that sets precedence for the SEC. But before you answer that, we're going to take a quick break. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. Talking about the cryptocurrency space, the crackdown, the choke point 2.0, and what could happen with Ethereum. So we're going to come back, speculate with that a little bit more. I'm going to be right back with more talking about the SEC enforcements on crypto. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. T-I-K-A.com.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, and I am joined with James Murphy. He's a securities attorney. You can find him online on Twitter at MetaLawMan. Now, we were talking about before the break about if the state of New York deemed Ethereum a security, what does that do for other states? And you're saying sometimes states kind of respect that, but maybe not always, like we saw with marijuana. But I'm curious what that means then for the SEC, going back to like precedents and that sort of a thing. Does that, we've seen in the past, like obviously, as I already kind of opened up with, like New York has been very restrictive. And so a lot of things you can't do in New York that you can do across the rest of the country. So if they did that, would it be sort of like always is, well, New York's restrictive, you can't do Ethereum in New York, but you can do it in the rest of the country? Or do you think the SEC then probably picks that up? And I know this is all speculative.
Yeah, it is. So the SEC, the New York AG is suing under a New York statute called the Martin Act. And its requirements in order to prevail are pretty easy to establish. And so no other state has the Martin Act. So that might be a little bit of a barrier for recognition an outcome where Ethereum is declared a security, perhaps. But the top appellate court in New York has said that in New York state courts, we will look to the federal law to determine whether there's a security here. And so you will see in New York state cases, they're talking about the federal case, the Supreme Court case of Howey. It will be influential, perhaps, and will certainly be cited by the SEC in every case if they were to prevail. Now, one thing I would say that makes this even more unusual is there is a agency in New York that is responsible for determining whether digital assets are securities and whether they could be sold to New York residents. And that's not the New York Attorney General, it's the New York Department of Financial Services. The New York Department of Financial Services granted bit licenses to Gemini, Coinbase, PayPal, Fidelity, and others to permit them to trade a number of tokens. In Fidelity's case is just two, Bitcoin and Ethereum, but all of them were specifically permitted by the regulator who's responsible for making this decision. They were permitted to allow New York residents to trade Ethereum on their platform. So the New York Attorney General's argument collides with this agency that's supposed to be the expert on this question. So that's a little weird, and it'll be interesting to see if the New York Department of Financial Services enters the fray and says, hey, wait a minute, we looked at this really hard. We have the most stringent requirements for permitting trading of digital assets of any state in the United States, for sure. And we permitted this trading of Ethereum. We disagree. It'll be interesting. It'll be political because it's New York, but that's going to be interesting.
Wow, that is interesting. And then it looks like, I mean, I saw you tweeted out earlier, again, check them out online at MetaLawMan. You tweeted out earlier back to this kind of President's Economic Report that there might be something in there that might also help out some of these crypto security things. Regardless of the label used, a crypto asset may be, among other things, a security, commodity, derivative, or another type of financial product, depending on the facts and circumstances. So is that something else where now maybe potentially the executive branch might also disagree with that?
Well, I know, I don't know. I presume that Gary Gensler is unhappy with that language, and I'm a little surprised that it was allowed in there because it significantly undercuts his position, which is all of these tokens, you know, however many there are now on coin market cap, I have no idea, 23,000, whatever.
Something like that.
They're
yeah.
all securities under my jurisdiction here at the SEC, except for Bitcoin. And so clearly that statement, it collides with that point of view and says these digital assets, these crypto assets could be commodities, could be securities, could be other financial instruments, or could be something else entirely. It was a non-exclusive list of the options that these things could be sorted into. And so that feeds into an argument that most of these entities that have either issued a token or trade tokens on a platform have said, and that is there's no clarity as to which of these are securities, and that's required. Under our constitutional concept of due process, you're supposed to know ahead of time what is prohibited, and so that you can steer around stuff that's forbidden. And
I mean, you can't go back and like retroactively do things like that.
Well, I mean, you think about that Wells notice. You know, they said, please, you've completed your investigation. Tell us which tokens are securities. And their answer is, no, we're not. You know, you'll see it in the complaint, I guess. And then in that case in San Diego I mentioned, hey, judge, the SEC will not tell me, is Ethereum a security? Please, I you know, engage with the Ethereum network. I'm now speaking as the plaintiff there. Somebody's got to tell me if this is illegal, if this is an unregistered security. I need a declaration. And the response was, you know what? We haven't made up our mind yet after 8 years of looking at it. Yeah. So that is definitely inconsistent with due process in this country.
The problem that I have with that is, I mean, the problem I have with the whole legal system is to your point, the laws are supposed to be laws, not rules, but laws. And we're all supposed to know what those laws are in advance. So I can plan my life and you can plan your life and we can plan our lives off those laws. Now, I've taken the stance. I had to kind of put Mr. Wonderful Kevin O'Leary in his place on the Bitcoin desk last year at the conference because he was like begging for these regulations. I said, hang on. Like, you're Canadian. I get that. I'm American. In America, we're free. So that means that we're free to do anything that we want unless there's a law that prohibits us from doing that. So we don't ask for laws to give us permission. Everything is, we're permitted to do everything unless there's a law prohibiting us. And so back kind of to the point that you're making, if there's no law specifically prohibiting them, then we should be free to do it. Now, I guess it gets, you know, there's the ignorance of the law is no excuse kind of a thing, right? So there is that. I guess the problem is the gray area that's here. But yeah, it seems like when these companies like Coinbase are saying, look, we've specifically asked them. They haven't, you know, they've let us proceed with this. I mean, they got a public listing. it should have been caught at some point. And so, you know, I think to your point, you can't really go back and retroactively change those laws. And so that's going to be a problem. It's going to be
absolutely. And look, it's not hidden. It's not tricky what needs to happen. Look at Europe, of all places. I rarely use that phrase, look at Europe, for an example of anything, but 27 countries within the European Union got together and said, all right, we need comprehensive laws about what is going to be permissible in the issuance, distribution, and trading of digital assets, stable coins, et cetera, how the custody is going to work, how people need to prove their reserves, how clients' assets need to be custodied and segregated. All of this is enshrined in law, and they're rolling it out next month with like a year and a half of lead time for companies to adjust their operations, stop doing things that are violative of these new laws. That's how you do it.
Or you don't, and you just let them go, right? Or you don't. Right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. I'm talking with James Murphy. You can find him online at Meta Law Man. If you want to stay up to date with what's going on in the legal space, because it is changing fast, and you should be up to date on that. We covered a lot. Something to watch. Check him out at Meta Law Man. He's a securities attorney. I should be clear about that. And be safe out there. That's what we got. Thanks so much for listening.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.